Do you think you'll ever own your own home? Or do you already own one? If you tell me your age and where in Canada you live, I can probably answer these questions without ever meeting you. The housing market in this country is a funny thing, and it's a huge source of frustration for anyone in Canada's biggest cities, where the market has been so out of control for so long that the term bubble no longer applies. And now that insane demand is having a ripple effect everywhere from nearby suburban communities to cities down the highway to other cities in other provinces where you can afford a palatial detached home for the price of a one-bedroom condo in downtown Toronto or Vancouver. Canada has tried a number of things, from interest rates to foreign buyer taxes to new rules around mortgages in an effort to even the playing field a bit, to regain some semblance of control over an investment market that is more closely tied to how we feel about our future than any other. And yeah, of course there are exceptions to that. And no, not everybody needs to be a homeowner. But look, for generations, the purchase of a family home was a symbol of arriving. Arriving as an adult, in the stable middle class, as a real family. And in at least a few places in Canada right now, either that definition needs to change, or something else does. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Sarah Nydoba writes about the housing market for publications like Maclean's, Canadian Business, and TVO. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
When you end up talking about this subject, what kind of image do most people have of the housing market in Canada, particularly the big cities?
Well, everyone's impression of the housing market tends to rest on where they sit in it.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that most people shake their heads at the state of the housing market, particularly in the Toronto and Vancouver. You get a lot of, oh, I'm so glad I got into the market a couple years ago, or, oh, I'm worried about my kids. Like, those are the things that come up at dinner parties a lot.
What is the state of the real estate market in Canada in 2019, 2 years after everything was crazy?
So the answer to that question depends on where you were asking it from. Nationally, things are stable, but not particularly energetic. You're seeing a relatively flat price, slightly falling sales. In Vancouver, things are a lot cooler than they were in the spring of 2017. In Toronto, things are stable. And then in different pockets, you have different things. So in the West, things are quite slow right now, partially because of oil. In the East, things are doing fairly well. Cities like Montreal and Ottawa are doing quite well because they're affordable and they have strong job markets. I think you guys talked about PEI recently on your podcast, and their real estate market's doing very well as well because they've got strong immigration, lower price point, a lot of their homes. So that's kind of like the sweet spot if it's like a good job market, but you're not seeing those big, big prices like in the greater Vancouver or the greater Toronto area. There's a lot of opportunity, but I mean, there is just such a focus on those two centers that it can be, as somebody who lives in Toronto, sometimes it feels impossible to think about that as an option.
We legitimately have conversations in our story meeting here about moving to smaller towns in Canada, specifically for the housing market. I feel like we're not alone.
No, I mean, one of the things we do at Maclean's is there's a column where we'll take a number. So last week was 250,000. And then we'll say, what can that get you across Canada? And the answer in Toronto is basically nothing. But you can get a nice piece of land and four bedrooms if you're willing to go northern Ontario, a lot of places in Saskatchewan, the east. So what a lot of economists will say is that there's the story in maybe like Toronto and Vancouver, and then there's the story regionally, and those are quite different generally.
In those cities, in Toronto and Vancouver in particular, how hard is it just for a middle-class to average-income family to purchase a home?
I was actually doing research for another story today, and there's a stat that came up that was in the GTA over the last 30 years. Home prices have risen 435%, and household incomes have risen in that same time 115%. So when you think about that, even if you are a well-earning, dual-income young family, it's incredibly difficult to enter the market. And what you are seeing is that condos are more and more the way that people are attempting to do it because the single-family home, especially in the core, just feels out of reach for a lot of people.
How has the market changed? I feel like we've been having this conversation about Toronto and Vancouver in particular, but the housing market in general for the last, I don't know how long it's been going on to, but several years.
So there's a good narrative, I would say, in the last 3 years, in that in the spring of 2017, if you may recall, there was a lot of attention paid particularly to the Toronto housing market because you were seeing these big month-over-month home price increases. Mm-hmm. And people were saying, this is a bubble. You know, this isn't sustainable. There was worry both from people who wanted to enter the market, but also observers saying, you know, is this actually realistic, these prices, or is it just speculation, a fervor around homes? And then what then sort of happened was that the Ontario government at the time, the Wynne government, introduced the Fair Housing Plan, which had, you know, a number of components, but it also included a 15% foreign buyer tax. Mm-hmm. There was a concern that foreign buyers were coming into the market, buying up property, pushing prices up. Statistically, there's still some debate about how much of a factor that actually was, but the idea of it and sort of the speculation that it caused had an impact. Mm-hmm. So when that tax came in, you saw prices go down very quickly. And then we had a couple of other things start to happen. So interest rates ever since the 2008 financial crisis had been very low. We're talking about 15% for a very long time. And the Bank of Canada started to raise those. And when interest rates go up, so do mortgage rates. So that also had an impact on things. And then sort of the final, I would say nail in the coffin, but final factor was last January, stricter mortgage rules came into place, which we can go into if you want.
Yeah, well, I want to understand how they work. So I think a lot of us have heard that there's new mortgage rules, but what do they mean on the ground for someone buying a house?
So the new mortgage rules, so they came into place last January, and they took a big chunk out of sales because the reason for them was the idea that as interest rates are rising, which they have been and the Bank of Canada has indicated that they will continue to, the fear would be, can people continue to make their mortgage payments, right?
Right.
So the government basically stepped in and implemented this additional stress test with the idea that they didn't want people buying homes they couldn't afford. And what it meant was that previously, if you had put down a 20% down payment, you wouldn't have to do a stress test. Like, you seemed like a credible buyer, you were okay. Mm-hmm. And you could then purchase on your bank's rate, which would probably be, if it was competitive, you know, 3% or somewhere thereabouts. The new stress test is that you have to qualify at either the bank's 5-year rate or your bank's rate plus 2%, which is probably in the 5-ish range, whichever is higher. So you had people who could have purchased a certain amount based on that 3% rate who now are looking at this 5% rate thinking, maybe I actually can't qualify.
Right.
At least for what I had wanted, what I had envisioned. So a lot of people are priced out of the bigger markets like Toronto because of the test. And that took, a big bite out of sales January of last year. Then you saw sales go down out throughout the year and then slowly start to inch up again. And then this year they've also been kind of, I would say, sluggish.
Well, that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk to you is because it does seem from your reporting and from, the monthly real estate data that comes out that in the big markets, they haven't seen that typical spike that they usually do when the weather gets a little nicer, right?
Right. So the numbers that we have right now are the latest numbers are from March. So not, as we Canadians know, too warm
right.
yet. But you're right that this is traditionally the beginning of the spring market, and it's definitely not the boost that is traditional. You know, the Canadian Real Estate Association in their latest release, and they're the guys who put up the national stats, said that this was, I think, a 6-year low. So, you know, there's some reasons for that. I think the mortgage stress test is a big one. Rising interest rates are a big one. But the consensus from at least economists seems to be still positive. Like, their thing is this is natural and healthy.
Right.
Because we had these prices that were unsustainable. Yes, things are a little bit cooler right now, but, you know, it's not in a free fall. And you'll probably see activity start to pick up more in the summer and the fall. And there's also, you know, the federal budget included some things for homeowners. So there is a thought that down the line, when that actually comes into place, which is in the fall, that could also be a slight boost for sales.
Have we seen evidence that people in Toronto and Vancouver are expanding their outlook? Are we seeing markets in kind of adjacent cities bubble up?
Absolutely. It's especially, I mean, like, the thing is when you say, like, the Greater Toronto Area, what you're really seeing is, like, Hamilton is doing very, very well. If you talk to the realtors there, or even, like, the municipal politicians, like, they know there's such a drive there. And really what you're going to see as well is not even in, I think Hamilton is perhaps an obvious example, but like smaller towns like Clarington or like a little bit farther out, maybe like 2 hours drive from Toronto, they are expecting to see huge population boom just because there is so much migration to the area. But, you know, it's very, very difficult to buy even an hour outside of the core of Toronto.
You mentioned the foreign buyer tax. And we've talked a couple times on this podcast about the influx of Chinese money in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that it might have kind of made a small dent in the Toronto market, but have we seen, we've now got enough data for a while from mm-hmm. Vancouver. Have mm-hmm. we seen it really have an impact there?
Foreign buyer taxes do have almost always an immediate impact. What many economists will say is that they are not necessarily a good long-term approach because what they're doing is they are trying to tap down on demand, but they're not addressing supply. So in Vancouver, for instance, they introduced their foreign buyer tax in 2016, and then they sort of added some additional elements to it in the spring of 2018. And both times that this happened, there was an effect on the market. Like right now, actually, obviously prices are still very high. The market has been much cooler in the last year because of this. But what a lot of industry watchers will sort of say is, yes, that this has had an impact in the last year. Maybe it will continue in the next couple months, but you still have a huge amount of demand for property in Vancouver. You still have a limited supply. Ultimately, this tax is not going to impact those fundamental things anytime soon. And when you look at the data of how many foreign buyers there are in Vancouver, it's not that it's not a factor. It certainly is, especially when it comes to luxury property. But that's not the fundamental thing that's driving up prices in that city. So I don't think that market's going to become affordable anytime soon.
Well, this is the casual conversation that I think a lot of people have with their friends when they speculate about real estate, whether they own it or are hoping to buy. It ultimately comes down to, is it a bubble?
Mm.
And it's not by now, right? Like, we're well past considering this a bubble.
No, it's not a bubble. It's interesting, though. The piece that I wrote for McLean's is very much written from a perspective of I include a lot of economic commentary. And it's very different talking to economists about this or even looking at the Bank of Canada reports and talking to somebody trying to buy a home. Because when you look at the market as a series of numbers and trends, like right now, for instance, the market is cooler than it was, but it's still not accessible to so many people. And when you think about affordable housing, that term means different things to different people. Often what it means to, especially the new construction market, is making homes affordable to first-time buyers. When the federal government talks about it, it's often creating affordable housing for people in need. Mm-hmm. And those are very different things, although both very important problems in both Toronto and Vancouver.
Do we have any sense of if there is more supply coming? I know there's no shortage of condos being built, but the kind of single family homes that we talk about when we say aspirationally, we'd like to buy a house.
When you say is new supply coming, you will get different answers from different pockets of people, I would say. And people who believe in different solutions to the problem being we are going to see a lot of people coming into the GTA and the GVA in coming years, and we need to house them. We don't have enough to house them. Some people might say, well, what we need to do is clearly there's a big demand for single family homes. We need to build those. If there are limitations on us building those, we need to lift them. The new construction industry will often say, you know, it takes too long to build a home. We need to like work at cutting the red tape on that.
Right.
And that's the solution. So that's, you know, one thing that people would put forward. Doug Ford, when he was running for premier, suggested building on the green belt, which received large people did not care for that. But that's sort of like one way to look at it.
The choice you're always going to make, right, is that there's only so much space and some of it's protected.
But then what you might see from, for instance, a report from the Ryerson City Building Institute is talking about missing middle housing, which is looking at, instead of this obsession with single family homes or, you know, the small box condo that people are not particularly happy with as an option, especially if they mm-hmm. want to raise a family, thinking about mid-density housing. So, you know, a smaller building with bigger units intended for families, thinking about where we can build in the city. So this is an issue in a lot of cities, but I'll use Toronto as an example. The way that it's zoned means that you can only buy or build certain types of property in certain areas. So there are designated growth areas, usually at major intersections near transit hubs like Yonge and Eglinton,
right,
where you can build and you see those big condos. But what some people would advocate for is you have something called a quote-unquote yellow belt, which are whole areas of the city with single family housing or low-rise homes, that the way they're zoned, you can't build larger buildings. And some people would say, if we just use that same land and the same buildings and we started building larger homes, like mid-sized homes, we could house people that way without, you know, having to take up tracts of land, without having to build these new low-rise homes. So that's also a solution. The question of how is it going to go? There are projections on construction starts for the next year or two, but it's largely unknown, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it's unknown to me. Perhaps there are wiser people who have a sense. I think that's a debate we're still having about what is the solution. And it's not just happening in Toronto. I mean, like a lot of like Mississauga really is asking that question. Other municipalities are asking themselves, you know, because they have the numbers. They know that they're going to have a lot of people coming into the area. And the question is, how do you house them?
What's the biggest thing ordinary people get wrong when they read reports on the state of the housing market and whether availability spiked or dropped and costs spiked or dropped? Because we do a lot of obsessing about that every month.
I would say the biggest, I hesitate to say mistake, but I would say a lot of anxiety comes from looking at month-to-month reports when ultimately it's better to look at longer trends. It's easy to get upset about 1 month's reports when it might be an anomaly. There might be certain factors. It might be the weather's bad. It's better whenever you can to look at both the last year or two or even like the 10-year picture, because that will give you better data. So, you know, right now, if you were reading the month-by-month report, you might be like, oh, sales are falling. The market could be crashing. When in reality, like a lot of people feel that this is like a very stable situation at the moment.
When did we move from economists and people who analyze this stuff wondering if it was a bubble to realizing that this was the new normal and we'd stabilized?
I would say that a lot of economists, when we were at the peak bubble fear, were sort of cautioning people against that, in the sense that most especially, you know, bank economists will say they are not people who get easily upset, and they've been doing their jobs a long time. So they tend to, when those fears crop up, release notes that say, well, yes, like this X is concerning or Y is concerning, but let's remember this 10-year trend we should think about. So, but I think the peak of the worry was definitely in like March of 2017. And that progressed into people are always going to be worried. So if it's bubble-like conditions, that's worrying. If then there's a deep drop-off, that's worrying. Like there's always a way you can see it that is particularly concerning. And there's always going to be that one expert who gives quotes saying, you know, we're really up against the edge now, like the crash is coming. So it's good to read widely.
Yeah.
But maybe I would say about a year ago is when really the commentary started to be, we're doing a slow letdown of prices, but it's nothing to be concerned about. You know, the thing that was being said was the housing market isn't going to be the boon to the economy that it was when we were seeing those bubble-like conditions, quote unquote, but it's probably healthier.
When an average person, and I, you know, when I say it for the purposes of this conversation, I'm just saying, you know, an average two middle-income families looks at buying a house in Toronto or Vancouver and is looking at somehow affording $1 million-ish price tag. It can feel incredibly scary to realize that you might pay this and it could be worth $800,000, because we're all old enough to remember when houses in Toronto cost $500,000, $600,000. How does that impact what people do in the market?
Certainly, coverage or a sense of where the market is has a psychological impact on how people buy. So when you were seeing the rush of activity in the spring of 2017, there was a sense of like, you got to get in now, you don't want to miss out, you could make such returns. And then you had other people cautioning, saying, well, wait a minute, do you want to buy for this much now, given that, you know, things could decelerate? I would say that, I mean, the advice that I have been told, I will not say it's my advice, but the advice that I've been told by many people in the industry is sort of, if you are able to buy in a city like Toronto or Vancouver, where there is such demand, and that is not going away anytime soon, and you can afford to, that you're not really like taking out double loans or anything to do it, that is generally a good investment, because even if prices fluctuate somewhat month to month, they're still going to be a good value. The other thing to think about is like, if prices are lowered now, that tends to be a better time to get into the market if you can than if they are like particularly high. But, you know, these are things where I would say the worry is more, can you get into the market, than once you get in, what will happen to the value of your homes if you are in a market that is so desirable?
When we're kind of inundated with all of this data about how the market's doing this month and how it's doing next month and whether it's going to go up or down, how can people who are trying to find a house that works for them, do they need to tune that out, or is there a way for them to use that analysis to their advantage?
I would say kind of both. It doesn't make a lot of sense to obsess over it, especially since most people are buying and selling a home when it makes sense in their life.
Yeah.
They're not picking the exact right month. Statistically, they're thinking, I have to move for a job, or I just got married, or we have another baby on the way and we don't have room. Like, these are the things that cause people to. So given that there's probably not that much control over when you get to buy or sell, it's worth talking to, if you're working with a realtor, it's worth talking to them about it. It's worth saying, you know, I heard that prices
realtors
are...
Realtors probably love that question.
I know. Those realtors, call one today. It's worth thinking about it to some extent if you want to price your home competitively, or if you want to think about which neighborhood might be more in your price range. Like, it's worth thinking about, but it's probably not worth obsessing over, I would say.
How is such a business-like analytical topic still so incredibly emotional? Like, people really react to this data.
I mean, I would say with a lot of business topics, there's always a human impact. Like, it's funny, the notion of business existing as like a separate entity, when like anything that falls under that very large umbrella affects so many people, so can really be a very emotional topic. Housing, maybe for two particular reasons. One, it affects everyone in some way. And the idea of a home and being housed is a very visceral thing to many people, either because you grew up a certain way and you want to see that for yourself in the future, or because you didn't grow up with something and maybe you aspire towards that. There's so many lives that it touches. There's nothing like the anxiety of not knowing what your home might be or if you get to have one. For the millennial demographic, it's very stressful to think that that might not be an option for you. If you were underhoused, that, of course, is incredibly overwhelming and stressful in a city like Toronto or Vancouver. And then, you know, even if you maybe own a property, just being inundated day in and day out with the costs of that and the pressures that come with it is stressful. So it's such an emotional topic. And no matter how you write about it, even though it can be quite dry, it draws a very emotional response from people.
Thanks, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Sarah Naidoba covers the housing market for publications like Maclean's, Canadian Business, and TV Ontario. That was The Big Story. You can find more big stories at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find more big stories and a lot of other podcasts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. We'd love to hear from you on any of our social media channels, at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, and at The Big Story FPN, Allen's only on Twitter. If you'd like to find us, to recommend us to a friend, to leave us a rating, to leave us a review, type in The Big Story in your favorite podcast app of choice. I believe we are on Luminary now, if you want to go and pay for that. But you can get us for free absolutely anywhere. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.